This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Now, I'm a little down today, but before we get into my issues, we turn and say good morning to Chris Canty. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dave. Wondering why you're a little down in the dumps. Not sure
what's
going on.
Well, you know that my second career, as it would be, is the weather at this point.
Well, I mean, this is a big day for you. It's a lot going on in the tri-state area as far as weather is concerned.
We're in for it. I mean, I've done everything in my power to try to look at this positively, but I don't see good endings here today. I mean,
well, here's the glass half full angle on this one, Dave. Look at it this way. At least you have the opportunity to give a comprehensive weather report to make sure that folks are in the know as it pertains to what's going to happen in the tri-state area over the next 24 hours.
You're right. Maybe this is my time to really shine.
It's an opportunity to shine, kind of like your segment with Andy from Merrick.
Yeah.
This is your Super Bowl.
I like how you turned the tables. Well done. Good morning, Rick DiPietro. How are you?
Good morning, David. Good morning, Christopher. Yeah, this is your Super Bowl, Dave. I mean, this is when you have to shine. All eyes are on you. All ears are on you today.
But I'm nervous for what today brings weather-wise.
Yeah, but you got to tell people the truth.
Of course. Well, you got angry at me yesterday when I gave the truth.
Well, because you gave the truth about Friday on a Thursday, when Thursday was going to be a nice day. So you could have just focused on, you know, Thursday's going to be a great day, and then we can focus on, you know, wet blanketing everybody on Friday.
And yesterday, lovely day. Today, not so much.
Not so much, no. Which I'll take as a positive. It's a day off from the pool.
There you go. There you go.
For some reason, I refuse to wear any skin protection. I think I own the sun.
Did you burn yourself yesterday?
Of course.
Well, but I give you, I mean, Chris, I give him the UV index every day. I say, as I give it, UV index at 9, make sure you wear sunblock. Do you pay no attention?
No, I pay attention. I just thought I was tan enough at this point where it wouldn't affect me, but I was clearly wrong.
So now you're burned.
Now I'm burned, yeah. Neck area, completely sizzled.
You could also went with the Dave Rothenberg collection of swim shirts.
See?
Put one of those
refuse.
On.
I refuse. I would rather have blisters on my skin than wear a swim shirt.
No, you would not.
All this work. I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt. I'm rollerblading down my street in no shirt and tight shorts on. I ain't wearing a swim shirt.
We should contact one of the neighbors, Chris, and see if they would take video of this and send it to us. Because I would pay decent money to see him rollerblading in high neon shorts with no shirt on.
I wonder if we put a poll out, what would our listeners want to see more? You celebrating Super Bowl 42 championship naked, or Rick rollerblading down his street with some Dukes on and no shirt?
Well, I think mine is more embarrassing, but I mean, mine is, you know, you see what I've done, and that's life-changing. It's unbelievable. You see what he's done, and it's just more laughable, I think.
Let's be honest. Let's be completely honest here for a second. If I wasn't concerned that I would get fired, I mean, you could talk me into celebrating eating lunch in a bikini and posting it.
Thong swimsuit.
There is no shame in my game. Although my neighbors have kind of reacted like the Wilpons with the sale. They're actually saying, you know what? Take the less money, sell your house, and get out of the neighborhood.
Get out of here.
So let me ask you this question, Rick. Would you rollerblade down your street in a bikini if the Wilpon sold to Steve Cohen?
A
bikini would probably be too much clothes. Maybe a sock.
Wow.
Just a sock. I would go just a tube sock, maybe. Roll the dice with a tube sock.
That's how excited you would be.
That's it. And you'd be able to tell. With just the tube sock on, you'd be able to tell how excited I was.
You heard Buster yesterday saying this would be the wealthiest owner in all of baseball immediately.
I'd hang a towel on it and skate down the street. That's how excited I'd be. Be like a towel rack.
Oh, my gosh.
How about $4 billion? $4 billion. Yeah, I'll take the team for two and give me SNY for two.
Yeah, I'll give you two for that and two for this, and we'll wrap this whole baby up.
Does that not get you excited?
Yeah,
how does that not get you excited as a Mets fan?
Well, I mean, we can open up the phone lines to the Mets fans. Like, how can you see that there's a guy on the horizon that has so much money, that is willing to spend it, that you're this close from running your organization? You have to be excited, no? You have to be.
You have to be. You have to be. I mean, if you're a Mets fan, after all the phone calls we take complaining about ownership, not spending money, not being in on any of the big names, to now have potentially the richest owner in Major League Baseball, that's a Mets fan, that, I mean, if anyone's watched Billions, I mean, that character is loosely based on Steve Cohen.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, isn't it?
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
And all he wants to do is win? Yeah, I'll sign up for that. To now be a big market team in a big market as opposed to a small market team playing in a big market? 100%. I mean, now you can start dreaming.
I mean, if having him as the owner means that you're in on all the big-time free agents.
All of them.
And that
all
you don't have to concede to teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers for the big boys. Absolutely. If you're a Mets fan, you would be ecstatic about it. Now, the one thing is you have to look at how that move would be received by the rest of the owners. And I didn't realize this, but I was sitting there reading the article about the sale of the Mets in the Post, and they were saying that Rob Manfred was critical of everybody's analysis on what had happened with the talks that broke down earlier this year. And he said that the assertion that the transaction fell through as a result of something that the Wilpons did is completely and utterly unfair. Now, I guess we were not privy to all the facts or all the information about those negotiations, but if the owners in Major League Baseball don't trust Steve Cohen because of how everything went down earlier with the proposed sale this past spring, I don't know where that leaves the Mets in terms of selling the team to him.
Yeah, but that's what Manfred has to say. I mean, he works for the owners. He's not going to blame the Wilpons for that deal falling through. He's going to have the back of his owners.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. We don't know how it went down. We have no idea. You know what I'm saying? One side is going to say one thing. The other side is going to say another. We don't know who's to blame at the end of it. Now, we know the Wilpons are going to lose a hell of a lot of money as a result of it. But the only question remains, like, okay, do the rest of the owners around baseball look at Steve Cohen as somebody that they can trust, knowing that they've got that collective bargaining agreement negotiation with the players coming up in a year or so? So, I mean, I guess you'd probably say it's a good thing if Steve Cohen buys it and he's the highest bid because that improves the valuation of all the teams around baseball. But at the end of it, it is still a country club. Like, you still do want to like the people that are members of the club. And that's the part of it we don't know how the other owners around baseball feel about Steve Cohen.
I'll tell you what they do love, the fact that, I mean, all in, the New York Mets entity going for $4 billion, yeah, that's good for business. I mean, that's good for everyone involved.
No doubt.
And who knows if it's $2 billion? I mean, who knows if it even stays for the team at $2 billion? It could go up.
Of course it will. If listen, the guy's worth, what, $14, $15 billion?
$14 billion.
If the A-Rod J-Lo contingent goes up to $2 million, $2 billion, you don't think he goes up to $2 billion? Like, he'll just continue to go up. If he wants it, he'll get it. Now, I guess your question is valid, Chris. Are the other owners willing to sign off on it? But as far as money goes, if he wants it, he will get it.
Oh, yeah, we knew coming into this thing that he was going to be the highest bid, right? Like, we knew that. But we also, by kind of reading the tea leaves, knew that Jeff Philippon would consider trying to get lesser bids involved if that meant that he would be able to stay around and have control to a certain degree. Like, that's the other part of this that we don't know how it's going to go down. Like, if Jeff Wilpon is insistent on trying to be involved, depending on where those other bids come in at, if somebody is even remotely close to Steve Cohen, would Fred and Jeff consider taking the lesser bid in order to stay involved with the team? It seems a little ridiculous to me. I think you would try
to
go for the highest bid possible, but, I mean, I'm done trying to assign some rational thought to how the Wilpons look at this thing.
But is $300 million close? I wouldn't think so.
I mean, it's all relative, Dave. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure where A-Rod and J-Lo can get to in terms of overall dollars. I know that they got the Florida Panthers owner involved, and they got a couple of other investors that can kind of help push the number up a little bit. But I know that they can't outbid Steve Cohen. So Steve Cohen is going to have the highest bid. It's just a matter of, are they going to be able to come remotely close? And if they could, if that ends up being a situation, will Fred and Jeff decide to go with Steve Cohen, or will they go with the lesser bid from J-Rod's group? And how will Major League Baseball look at that? Does Major League Baseball want to have A-Rod involved beyond just being an analyst and being a part of an ownership group? Because that would sure as hell add a lot of sizzle to the Mets franchise.
Yeah, it would add sizzle. But, I mean, again, I'm just going to keep going back to the idea. I mean, this is the New York Mets. And how often do these flagship franchises go up for sale.
Not very often.
Yeah, I think Mike Vaccaro had a story. This is the second time in 56 years that a New York baseball team has been available for sale.
Exactly right. And I mean, if I'm an owner of any one of these teams, I'm going to want the New York Mets to sell for as much as humanly possible. I'm not going to allow the Wilpons to make a decision to take, you know, $300 million less because, you know, they want to be spiteful or they want to still be involved. Like, I don't want to hear Jeff Wilpon explain to me that, you know what, I like having my own locker down in spring training, and then when the guys are gone, I get to do, you know, Field of Dreams fantasy baseball. So I'm going to take $300 million less. No, you know what? You'll keep your mouth shut. We'll sell it for the $2 billion, and you can just go count your money. All right.
Wouldn't you think that a lot of current owners, if they were on the verge of selling, would love to sell it for a little bit less and wind up still being involved with the team? You can't have that as a new precedent, I wouldn't think, in ownership sales.
No, I think it would be dependent. I mean, it's owner to owner, like how much each owner wants to be involved. But I can't, if I own, I mean, that's like in your neighborhood. You know, if you were part of your homeowners association, the agreement was that any house that goes for sale, you have to vote on whether, you know, you agreed to the sale or not. And your neighbor's like, hey, I got an offer for, you know, $1.3 million, but I'm going to sell it for $900,000 because, you know, I like those people better.
Let me stay on weekends or something.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. They let me stay here till I pass away. No.
Right, exactly. I can rent the basement until I pass away.
Yeah, this isn't Ozarks where the guy gets to live in the basement. Now, you're going to sell it for the $1.3 And what are we even talking about? Especially because, you know, I mean, this is something that Steve Cohen wants, and he usually gets what he wants, right? So J-Rod is at, you know, $1.7 billion. Even if they move up to $2 billion, Steve Cohen's going to, you know, he's going to up his bid.
He'll go 2-1.
Yeah, he'll go 2-2, whatever. It doesn't seem like this is something that he's going to be willing to walk away.
He's already
away
gone 2-6. So we know at a minimum he can go there. And
he just went $4 billion.
He's just talking about buying SNY for $2 billion as well as buying the team for $2 billion. That's $4 billion.
Oh my god!
Without even blinking.
Now, Charles Gasparino. Four,
just so you know, that's 4,000 million.
I know. You can't even comprehend how much a billion is. Have you ever heard the stat? Like
a billion,
like,
is 1,000 million. Yeah, I'm just going to drop $1 million. Dollars,
yeah. Like a million seconds is, I don't know, I'm making up like a week, and a billion seconds is like 4 years or something. I'm making it up, but it's something insane like that. Like a million to a billion is just a crazy increase. Charles Gasparino, Fox Business, had a series of tweets about 30 minutes ago. So here we go. Some additional info on Mets bidding derby. Steve Cohen's interest in the team is very well defined. There is no auction just yet on SNY TV. When there is, his eyeball $2 billion valuation should drop dramatically. Network makes money but has tons of debt, which will cut its price significantly. Number two, lots of reporting about 7 different bidders. No one can figure out who these bidders are. As far as he's concerned, it's Cohen, it's A-Rod, J-Lo, and it's Blitzer Sports, and that's it. And three, interesting trash talking in the bidding group with people repping Steve Cohen, telling other owners how much money the Mets will lose in an effort to push down the competing bids, he is told. Leaks from the Mets side that Jeff Wilpon prefers to sell to A-Rod to push bids higher. He says he'll give us more information as he gets it. So that's where we are right now as far as the sale of the Mets.
Yeah, but we said this yesterday. I mean, you use both sides, right? Like, you leak it out there that you would rather sell to, you know, A-Rod and J-Lo. And then, you know, also leak out that Steve Cohen is still really interested. So J-Rod comes in at $1.7 billion, which is going to push up Stevie Cohen's bid. I mean, the fact that you're going to get $4 billion for the entire thing, SNY and the Mets.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. And also you got the Katz family that's involved. You think, I mean, are they going to be willing to say, hey, you know what, let's take you know, $300 million less and not even sell SNY that's apparently in debt, losing money, or making money, but still has debt to pay off because Jeff wants to still be involved? No.
How much say do they have in this whole process, though?
I think it's being sold because of them, isn't it?
That's part of the reason. Yeah, they're estate planning.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both trying to organize the estate planning, right? Fred Wilpon and Saul Katz, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know, man. This is going to be an interesting deal, however it shakes out. But I just, to me, the apparent, if you're going for the most amount of money, the apparent leader in the clubhouse has got to be Steve Cohen. And it doesn't feel like it's all that close when it comes to the other groups. So, I mean, going back and forth, trying to push the bid up, and I guess you're going to do everything that you can to squeeze every nickel that you can out of Steve Cohen, knowing that you're still going to end up losing hundreds of millions of dollars from the initial agreement of $2.6 billion. But, I mean, I just feel like if it was going to go to Steve Cohen, this would already be done by now. If it was going to be that cut and dry, why wouldn't this deal already be completed?
Well, because now on top of the $2 billion that Steve Cohen's willing to pay for the Mets, it seems like, you know, $2 billion is a lot more than people expected for SNY. So maybe what you lose in the sale of the Mets, you're actually making up for in the sale of SNY.
Yeah, because initially they weren't putting that on the table, right?
No.
They weren't going to include that. So this is a way that Steve Cohen can
get it all,
blow everybody else out of the water.
He can have everything. Everything he's always wanted.
I'll put up $4 billion and watch you try to say no to that.
Mm-hmm. How can you say no to that? If you're the Wilpons, how can you say no to $4
billion? You can't say no to $4 billion, Dave. There is no way you can say no to that. No way possible.
I mean, SNY is cutting TV shows. I mean, 30-minute TV shows. I mean, they're cutting loudmouths on SNY. They're not going to sell it for $2 billion? Stop.
If Steve Cohen buys it, are they really going to cut it?
No.
Are they not going to consider bringing it back?
Well, he can do whatever he wants.
Exactly.
Do whatever he wants. He could just run video of himself if he wants.
Anybody really wants to see that. But
no, right. he could do a half-hour infomercial on Rick skating around in the tight bathing suit.
Lots of potential for us, though. That's a great net guy, Long Island.
That's right.
Could reach out and say, hey, you know, Steve, got a radio show. Love to be simulcast.
Look at you. On that network.
Look at
you. We got a Yankees fan, but we could talk him into being a Mets fan. We could do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, my fandom can be bought.
So if we became friends with the new owner of the Mets, you would potentially switch right over.
What'd you say?
If we became friends with Steve Cohen, you would switch
over. No. I didn't say friendship could make me switch over. I said a check could make me switch over.
So if he said
says, yeah, if you become a Mets fan, then I'm going to simulcast you guys' radio show.
Really? You're locked in.
It's done. It's done.
Really? Wow.
It's done.
Nice.
Now don't tell Bernie Williams that, but.
No, of course not. Let's go to some of the calls.
Bernie Williams could put a wrench in the entire agreement. If all of a sudden Bernie Williams shows up,
he just sparkle his eyes at Chris.
Candy's like a puddle. Bernie comes in with the guitar and starts singing a love song to Candy. Be done.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Right. I'm sorry, Bernie. Maybe Steve will buy him too.
I'm sorry, Rick and Dave. I would not say I'm sorry.
I'm going with Bernie.
Sorry, Rick and Dave. I'm joining the band.
I want to be simulcast, but Bernie.
Yeah, we got a different version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Canty at Bernie's, the third in the sequel. All right, 800-919-3776. Let's go to Train in the Truck. Train, lead us off. You're on 98.7
ESPN. Hey, what's going on, guys? Rick, I don't know if I'll go beach towel. Maybe napkin. I could probably do a napkin. I don't know if I could do a beach towel like you.
face cloth. But, we'll start with a face cloth.
Yeah, right. Put a face mask on it. Listen. what I was going to say, Chris, yeah, any cheese on that taco make you come running, trust me, I know. But one of my buddies made a comparison with, like, the Wilpon and Dolan, like, how they both need to get rid of their ownership. But I'm trying to tell the guy, the Wilpons, you know, they're cheap and all of that, but at least Dolan spends the money on the Knicks to help. It's the people he hires that aren't too good. You know what I mean? But, like, I feel like with the Mets, it's like, get these guys, get owners out of here. But I don't know. I felt like the Knicks is in a better position as far as James Dolan goes. I know people hate him and all of that, but he tries. He tries to dish out all the money he can to help out. You know, so I don't know. I just wanted to – can you explain the comparison?
Yeah, money's not an issue with them.
You know what I mean?
Money's not an issue with the Knicks.
Right.
I mean,
that's not the issue.
It's just, I mean, he's, for some reason, wants to be involved in these decisions with the Knicks as opposed to the Rangers. And maybe that's because he hasn't found the right guy to run the team yet. I'm hoping that's the case.
Hopefully now with the new guys in place as far as Wes and all these guys, you know, it'll be different. But as far as the Mets, they got to start from the top now, everybody. You know what I mean? So hopefully Cohen comes in and changes, and, you know, cleans house, you know what I mean? So That's all I wanted to say, guys.
Let's just hope that Steve Stout is not indicative of this new Knicks regime and how they're going to get things going.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Let's hope that's not the case.
It is mind-numbing.
But you're right. There's no comparison between the Wilpons and James Dolan. James Dolan is willing to spend whatever it takes in order to make the team competitive. He just trusts the wrong people, whereas the Wilpons, they are bargain basement shopping all day, every day. And something about that has to change because the Mets are a big market team and baseball is in a better place if they're more competitive for the better players that hit the open market.
Yeah, it's called extreme wilponing. You've seen the show Extreme Couponing? It's extreme wilponing.
Extreme wilponing.
But it's not like the Mets are that far off. Like, you look at the Knicks and they, you know, 18 wins and the third pick and the fourth pick and the second pick. And I mean, the Mets are competitive. If you just had the little boost of a guy that had endless amounts of money.
But it's not just, but you know what, too, Dave? It's not even just the free agent stuff. It's all the other money that the Wilpons don't spend.
Oh, it's front office, it's scouting, it's all of it.
All that stuff.
The analytics teams.
Like, you're never in a good spot when the owner of your team counts on the money the team makes as his, you know, as their, you know, source of income for their business. Like, that's their main business.
Yeah, that's never a good thing.
That's never a good thing.
No.
Like, listen, as poorly run as the Knicks have been, if you were to ask me outside of Steve Ballmer, if there was no salary cap or salary restrictions, you could play, you know, you could pay any player whatever you wanted, I would feel comfortable in saying that the New York Knicks would, and James Dolan would do that.
I agree.
He would spend whatever it took.
I agree.
Just, I mean, they haven't figured out the whole, you know, the whole hierarchy of, you know, who the best person to hire as the team president, GM, and down the line is, and actually stick with the plan for an extended period of time. Like the coaching search. I mean, it's a dog and pony show. You can call it due diligence or whatever you want to call it. I mean, we're going to interview all these people. It always felt like it was going to be Thibodeau anyway, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's going to be the guy, and nothing about that has changed so far.
No, it hasn't. I mean, if that's the guy you wanted the entire time, that's the guy you. A lot of these like teams and leagues. I mean, it's a lot of the time the biggest complaint we have with the NFL, right? I mean, you're a billion-dollar corporation. Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to tell us what's right. Like, you make a decision, you stand by it, and that's it. And then we buy into it because you have confidence in it. Don't be willy-nilly and knee-jerk. Like, if this is a guy you want, you feel like he's the most qualified, then stand by it. This is who we picked. We feel like Tom Thibodeau is the best coach available. Okay, well, if you think so, then I guess we're going to buy into it. As opposed to, we're going to have 11, 12 different interviews. Come on.
I hear what you're saying, but because the Knicks have been so bad for so long, it's hard to give that organization the benefit of the doubt without them going through an exhaustive search. I mean, that's one of the things that we talked about when they hired Leon Rose. Like, why hire him now? Why not take your time and do your due diligence and research other potential candidates for your team president job? Why does it have to be such a immediate swing from firing Steve Mills and David Fizdale and then a few days later hiring Leon Rose? Did it have to be that quick? So, I mean, I don't know if I can be overly critical of them going through this process, because who's to say that you won't find some other candidates that you would like to have on the coaching staff with Tom Thibodeau if he ends up being your guy? You know what I'm saying? You take these opportunities to do as much fact-finding and to do as much research,
Chris,
on other potential coaches out there in the NBA landscape.
Yeah, but see, that for me is counterintuitive. If Tom Thibodeau is your guy, he picks the staff. I mean, that's just, all you're doing is more of the same, which has been the problem.
Well, you might not. Well, here's the thing.
You pick the coach and let the coach pick his staff. It's not going to, hey, we interviewed this person, we want him on your staff. That's not how it should work.
Yes and no, Rick. Yes and no. And I'll say that because you never know. There might be somebody that you might hear something from and you might learn something about that makes you feel like he could be a good fit for what Tom Thibodeau was trying to build. And Tibbs might be on board with it. You just never know. But you won't have the information unless you actually sit down and do the interview, unless you actually talk to these people face-to-face. And so that's why I'm not opposed to it. I mean, even if you don't end up bringing that person within your organization and you hire Tom Thibodeau, who's to say what happens 5-7 years from now?
Listen, in theory, I don't just...
Maybe if we've got to change directions and we've got to go another route, maybe one of these guys that we talked to back here makes sense for us in terms of where we're at and where we want to go.
Listen, in theory, I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
In theory, I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
Just the whole... But the timing of the entire thing.
Well, like, here's the thing. I think they need to get a head coach in place just so they can take advantage of whatever opportunity the NBA is going to give the teams that are not participating in Orlando to play basketball against one another. Whatever opportunity presents itself on that front, you need to have a head coach in place so you can take advantage of that. It's kind of like the NFL's version of allowing new head coaches to have the extra OTAs and minicamp. Like, to me, that makes all the sense in the world. You want to put that in place so Thibodeau can put his staff in place and he can go coach those guys.
Yeah, I don't even mean the timing in that regard. I mean the timing of all of a sudden opening up this coaching search.
Yeah, to 12 people.
It was going to be Atkinson or Thibodeau, and then all of a sudden they don't come up with a statement when the George Floyd thing happens. And then before you know it, there's, you know, 10 different people that are going to be interviewed for the job.
Yeah, you name it, they have an interview coming.
I think what you're saying is fair. The execution of what they're doing, yeah, I don't necessarily like it because it is late in the game for that. This is something that you could have done a couple months ago.
And you know who you know who's going to get it. I mean, we know it's going to be Thibodeau.
Yeah, but it felt like it was a response to the fact that they were taking heat. There was criticism.
So now let's deflect and let's interview everyone that's available for the head coaching job.
Well, not only that. I mean, it felt like the Rooney Rule situation. Like, you had two white guys that you had as the two guys you targeted, and then all of a sudden the George Floyd stuff happens, and you have a bunch of different black coaches you're interviewing. You're going to interview Becky Hammon. It's like anyone that you could think of to avoid being criticized, you're going to go interview. It felt like a reaction more than the actual process of what
they were doing. Does that surprise you? I mean, it's the Knicks.
No, it doesn't. And then it ends up being Thibodeau anyway. And you end up wasting time, to Chris's point. I mean, you're going to have an opportunity now to go, you know, potentially do a second bubble and have your new head coach get a chance to see what they have.
Exactly. To me, that's important. Allowing Thibodeau the opportunity to evaluate the players on the roster and kind of feel out what their roles will be in his program moving forward. Like, that's something that's invaluable, man. Like, you're not going to get that opportunity in any other offseason. So try to take advantage of it with what you got going on. I know it sounds like a crazy thing to say based on what we're dealing with, but, I mean, those are the cards that you're dealt.
Absolutely.
So if you're the Knicks organization, this is your opportunity to finally do something that seems like it's functional, do something that can be constructive. Put your head coach in place. Allow him to go coach the team in whatever bubble that the NBA is going to put together for you guys that are not participating in the playoffs, and then see what you got. You get a chance to do that before all the draft and the free agency and everything else. So, I mean, it seems like it's one of those things that makes too much sense not to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the circumstances stink, but you got to try to take advantage of what you're dealt.
That's right. And I think they will. I don't think it'll be long. I think very soon Thibodeau will be the head coach of the Knicks.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. That's exactly.
And we'll just see. I mean, they would have to. You'd imagine that Leon Rose, I mean, with all his connections, would know how hiring Tom Thibodeau would land with, you know, some of the young stars in the league that aren't necessarily happy with their situations.
They better know that.
They have to.
I mean,
that seems like common sense. If you're hiring Tom Thibodeau and you look at what the Knicks have right now, which is pretty much nothing, there's two players that you'd build around at the moment. I mean, is he signing up for a long-term rebuild? You have to develop young talent and draft well, but still, I mean, I'm sure, you know, sooner rather than later, he'd like to be competitive.
Yes.
Which would kind of signal that they're looking at one of these, I don't know if it's, you know, Devin Booker or if it's, you know, Donovan Mitchell.
Carl Anthony Towns?
Yeah, see, but I don't know how that relationship is. That didn't seem like it worked out when Thibs was in Minnesota.
It sure didn't.
It sounded like we don't think it did. It didn't work out well.
Yeah.
But that has to be, I mean, all that has to be baked in.
They
don't want to start
closing
doors. You don't want to close any doors with the head coach that you're going to hire when you have plenty of people interested in the job.
So let me ask you guys this question. What do you think we know first? Who's going to buy the Mets or who the next head coach is of the Knicks?
Knicks.
Feels like Knicks, right? Seems like this Mets thing is going to drag out for a while.
Yeah, I think the Mets could take a couple months. I think the Knicks will know soon.
Well, they won't have a deal in place in the real near future.
You're talking Mets in principle, yeah.
Because they got a payment they need to make.
Yeah, that's true too. They've got a time.
But they've already given out. I would probably say Knicks for the simple fact that they've already, I mean, they've had all these interviews and this is the second one with Tibbs.
Mm-hmm.
It feels just like, you know, the last step before they hire him.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to do a virtual interview on Zoom, it feels like this is like we're just kind of crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
We know he's going to get the job. It's so transparent. Like, we've known the whole time. They interviewed him. Now they interview everyone. Interview him again, and he's going to wind up getting the job.
Yeah, what do you think that conversation was like? Hey, Tom, I hate to do this, but we have to.
We're going
to
interview everyone that's looking for a job, and then we'll come back to you. And we'll
you
give
know
you
you're getting the job.
Yeah.
So how's everything going? You safe? You healthy? Okay.
Yeah.
We'll announce this in a couple of days.
Your family good? Good? All right, great.
Good. All right, talk later.
We'll talk to you soon. Be well. Stay safe. Hydrate. All right, today on ESPN Daily, on reservations across America, Native American women are going missing or being murdered in alarming numbers. Hear how some are learning to fight back through boxing. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. You remember in the first hour talking about the difference between a million and a billion? You guys remember that, yes?
Yes.
A million seconds, Chris. Guess how long a million seconds is?
Dave, I have no idea.
12 days.
Okay.
A billion seconds? 31 years.
Probably talking about years.
31 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that it just shows you a billion is so much more. Like, you hear a million, you're like, that's a lot. You hear a billion, that's a lot. I mean, do you realize how many millions it takes up to get to a billion? It's unbelievable.
It's a whole lot of millions, Dave. 1,000 million to make 1 billion. Yeah. And the Wilpons can get $4,000 million.
Right.
If they sell the Mets and SNY to Steve Cohen.
In seconds,
doesn't really feel like a hard choice, does it, Dave? Especially knowing that you got to sell.
You have to sell. The guy has more money than he knows what to do with. He's willing to spend $4 billion on your property. Right? I mean,
and if he ever wants to see a Mets championship in his lifetime, he probably needs to take over the team.
Because
the
Wilpons
ain't going to do that.
Rick, do you know how old he is?
Steve Cohen?
Yeah.
I believe he is in his...
I think he's early 60s, right?
Steve Cohen is 64 years old.
Yeah. 64 years old.
Yeah, he turned 64 on June 11th.
Oh, which could be a holiday if he takes over the team.
I would imagine that Mets fans would be ecstatic. I would be ecstatic. I don't want to speak for all Mets fans, but I'd be ecstatic.
No, I will speak for all Mets. I bet you 90%+ of the Mets fan would be thrilled.
So with that being said, you guys would be disappointed if A-Rod bought it?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think they have that kind of money.
Okay.
The reason you'd be disappointed is because you knew Steve Cohen was the other potential buyer.
Right.
If Steve Cohen was just out and it was, A-Rod's group,
I don't care if it's A-Rod or the Harris, whoever, Blitzer. I don't care.
The fact that it's not the Wilpons would be a win, though, right?
Would be a win, yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, to go from the Wilpons to any of this new ownership, I think, is a nice move for the Mets. But to
that's
go
what
from
I'm
the
saying,
Wilpons,
But now because Steve Cohen has gotten involved, you guys would be disappointed if he didn't get the team.
Well, listen, you're on the other side. You're kind of a very neutral observer as a Yankees fan.
I can be objective about it. You guys have your heart in it, so it's a little bit different.
So don't you agree with our analysis, though, or do you think we're wrong?
No, I mean, I just think that if the Wilpons sell the team, that's a win. Now, how big of a win it is depends on who buys it and how much money they're actually willing to spend to make the team as competitive as it could possibly be. Because as Rick mentioned, it's not just about being able to go after free agents, but it's about investing in the infrastructure for player development, building up the farm system, being able to have an analytics department. Like all of those things, all of the advantages that the New York Yankees enjoy, like that's how the Mets should be operating, knowing that they're in the biggest sports market in the country.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get someone that was on the level financially, I mean, it's not, he doesn't have as much money as Steve Ballmer, but you've seen the effect that Steve Ballmer's had on the Clippers.
The Clippers are right there. With anybody as far as relevance, NBA franchise is concerned.
Every person that I've seen so far, especially with Avery Bradley deciding to opt out in the depth of the Clippers, has now picked the Clippers to win the championship.
That doesn't bode well for Chris at all.
I actually, in all honesty, feel better about the Lakers than I do the Clippers.
Yeah, I was about to tell you. Yeah, I'm not worried about that at all. I am fully confident that my Lakers are going to take care of business down in Orlando.
It could make no sense, but for some reason, like some of the stories now I'm reading, not even just the Clippers, but like the fact that James Harden and Russell Westbrook aren't on the team playing, those little things bother me for some reason.
And then LeBron James also said that leaving his family felt like he was going to do a bid in prison. I have to imagine if he's giving up that time with his family, he's not giving it up for no reason. He's going to finish the drill.
And he's rocking a fanny pack, which I respect.
Delicious food down there.
I don't
there
know,
in the
man. I feel a way about that crossbody fanny pack, man.
He was actually, no, this was across his waist fanny pack. This wasn't crossbody.
Oh, really?
Oh, this was across the waist, baby. Ugh. Oh, yeah. Full
come
on fanny.
Bron. Come on, Bron. You can't that's bring
so many
that
items.
Back. You can't bring that
so
back.
So many
that's
not, items. Not, what does he possibly
that's
have?
Not the fashion statement that you're trying to make, man. I just. Come on.
Listen, it serves a purpose. I got
what
listen,
could
I got
he possibly
wallet.
Have in the fanny pack?
He could have his wallet. He could have some gum. He could have some disinfectant wipes.
Gum.
And
but explain to me
gum.
This, Rick. What can you do with the fanny pack that you can't do with the book bag?
Well, you're not going to go out with the book bag.
Well, why? Gonna,
why not? You're walking around campus.
I mean, why can't you put a backpack
may,
on?
Listen, he may have a book bag that he'll walk around the campus with him. But for you know the walk from wherever he, like his car to the plane, he had the fanny pack, which I think is nice.
How about pockets? Whatever happened to pockets?
Yeah, right? Too much stuff to put in right, Dave,
I got too much stuff to put in the pockets.
You have
pockets
too much stuff enough. For pockets?
Yeah, I wear my jeans are too tight, and I have too much stuff.
Why do you wear your jeans so tight?
Another great question, Dave.
It's fashionable. Oh, can't don't even start. I mean, your pants are as tight as they come. I don't want to hear it. You could barely get a credit card in those pockets. Stop it. You know who you're kidding.
You guys are funny.
Yeah, Dave, by the way, that is true. Steve Cohen inspired the character of Billions.
Really?
Yeah.
Bobby
which is
Axelrod.
A great show.
Yeah.
It's a terrific show.
Oh.
Yeah.
So if that's any indication of how he's going to attack being the owner of the Mets, sign
right?
me up. Sign me
I
up.
I could not agree more. Let's go to our buddy. Let's go to Spike in Jersey. Spike, you're next up on 98.7.
Well, thank you for getting me on, and thank you for another wonderful week of programs. I know I've been on a bit of a down-sounding feeling.
You sound better today, Spike. You sound like you're a little more vivacious.
I am. I usually have much alacrity and like to bring some the tenor of the show up to a little laughing level. But with what's going on in the world today, you know, I just can't balance it out. And I think that's a problem a lot of us are having, honestly. I really do. But let's just hope for the best. The virus is scaring the crap out of me because the numbers yesterday are going through the roof. So I don't want to beat a dead horse because I have a subject I want to get to quickly. I know time is short. But it just seems to me this. I have a kid in Orlando. He's 38 now. And it's rough down there. It's rough down there. So if they're going to put him in the bubble and the bubble has a hole in it and the Phil Swift from Flex Seal isn't around to patch it real fast, we're going to have a big problem. But I wanted to get to what you talked about, the Knicks coach. I think they're going to pull something out of their rear end. I can't see Thibodeau. Thibodeau's reputation is burn out the vets. We all know it. You guys talk about it magnificently all the time. He's just not the right guy, not with this roster. It really isn't. So I wouldn't be surprised. And again, it has a little less meaning to me now, but I got to move on with this. I just have to for my own sanity. I think Mark Jackson's going to come out of the woodwork somehow and get this job because his track record is with youngsters, with point guards, and I want to see one of the three-point guards that we've gone over ad infinitum, the ones we really want, because now's the time to move. But again, I want to thank you all. Chris, you know we've been communicating on all these issues, and let's ring the bell and get this thing fixed, boys, because you got young kids, man. I just, when I see another 1,000 almost dead yesterday and 62,000 more cases, something, this is, if this was a sporting event, and the testing was a degree of difficulty. I wouldn't even ask what the scores were, how this testing is done, because they couldn't have crapped it up anymore. But, boys, have a great weekend, and let's get some laughs in.
All right. We appreciate it, Spike, and thanks for the phone call. I think we're all concerned. I think the numbers are startling, and that's the one point he made. Number two, I don't think Mark Jackson is going to get this job, Rick. I don't see him as a – I mean, I guess he has a chance, but I don't think it's realistic to think that Mark Jackson is the new head coach of the Knicks.
No, it doesn't feel that way, especially with you know how they've gone through the interview process and the fact that Tibbs is coming back for a second interview. And I mean, let's face it, it's not always the best guy or gal that gets hired. It usually, you know, where's the strongest relationship? And it seems like the strongest relationship for Leon Rose is with Tibbs, doesn't it?
I think you're absolutely right, Rick. And then you couple that with the fact that Mark Jackson is not the easiest head coach to get along with. You know, and his time at Golden State, he ruffled some feathers in the front office. It seems like it takes certain types of personalities to be able to deal with a strong-minded head coach like Mark Jackson. And if you don't have that pre-existing relationship there, I think that would be a hard hire to pull off. So I'm with you. I think Mark Jackson is out. Even though I think he would be fully capable of doing the job, I just don't think Leon Rose is going in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, listen, do I think Kenny Atkinson would be a good fit for what this Knicks team needs to do? I absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, just looking at this thing from the the outside looking in the way they've gone about this, I mean, it feels like Leon Rose from the get-go, I mean, with his relationship to Tibbs, is that was going to be his guy. I mean, connect the dots. Look at, look who he's hired so far. I mean, World Wide West, he's got a close relationship to World Wide West.
He wants his guy. Well, but
of course you do.
That someone would want your own guys that you're comfortable with, right?
Exactly. Exactly. As long as it's the right guy that's making the decisions.
As long as it's guys that are competent when it comes to the business of basketball and turning around a franchise.
Are you a Thibodeau or a Thibodeau?
I don't call him Thibs. I call him Tibbs.
Okay.
Yeah, I call him Thibodeau.
You call him and I call him Thibodeau.
Well, that's how it's spelled.
I don't know what's actually right, though.
Like, it's Jason Licht, not Light. Your name is Licht.
His name is not Licht.
It's Licht. It's L-I-C-H-T. It's Licht.
His name is not Licht.
That's how it, but then spell it right. It's Licht.
Wow.
It's Licht.
It's not Licht.
It is Licht.
It may be spelled phonetically Licht, but it's pronounced Light.
I say Licht, all right? That's how I roll.
So, you're an NFC South insider.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks, New Orleans Saints, mm-hmm. and you're chopping it up on SportsCenter. You're going to be like, well, I spoke with Jason Licht, and he said this. People would think it was ridiculous.
No, I say Jay Licht. Start the phone with Jay Licht.
Jay Licht.
You're an inanimate object.
Give me that again. Let me hear it again, Sam.
You're an inanimate object.
So let's break, come midway, back and talk about
midway,
the landscape.
David, an inanimate
landscape.
Object.
Midway through the first word, I didn't know if I was pronouncing it right, which screwed up object.
I have that all the time with names.
I guess it would be fitting, though. I mean, it's not like the Washington Redskins do a lot of winning. Kind of like the other team rolls their helmet out there.
For the most part, it has been like that for a long time. All right, so Myron Roll, right? I mean, terrific college football player. Currently a doctor.
Really smart guy.
Was he a Rhodes Scholar?
Rhodes
as well?
Scholar, neuro. Yeah, yeah, he studied.
Played at Florida State, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think he's in neurology now.
Yeah, I mean he is nothing short of brilliant. So he was on Golic and Wingo this morning, and here's his take on college football in 2020.
I would say no. I would say it'd be irresponsible to play right now, especially with the numbers being as it is, and also, frankly, with how uncomfortable some of these athletes are with playing. They need to be your primary focus, right? I mean, if you have several players that are saying, I don't feel comfortable playing, I don't feel like this is the right move, I don't think that I want to see changes happening with our health and with the security that we have as far as the testing and, is this even possible or pragmatic to have a close contact sport, to be in a huddle, to tackle somebody, be in a locker room, to be in a weight room with your teammates, and not contract the virus. I don't know how I'm going to respond to this virus. We've seen people who have comorbid and premorbid conditions that are older. Yes, they maybe decompensate quicker from coronavirus, but we have seen young people who have needed acute level critical care sort of treatment and therapy for this. So I would say it's irresponsible to start right now.
So there you have it. I mean, this is a guy that was a high level. I mean, Florida State, high level college football player, who's a doctor right now, a high-level doctor right now, and he's saying, it's just, Chris, it's irresponsible to think about playing football right now.
Well, it's what we've been saying all along, guys. I mean, this doesn't come as any surprise, especially when you consider where a lot of these big-time college football programs are in the South. I mean, states like Florida, states like Texas, and they have COVID cases that are spiking. It just doesn't seem plausible to be able to actually pull this off and have players come in for training camp and get ready for a season that's going to start late August, early September. Just doesn't feel like that's going to happen. And so you saw yesterday that the Big Ten and their commissioner came out and said that we're going to play a conference-only schedule, but it's not a fait accompli that we're actually going to have college football this season. We might be in a situation where we have to accept the reality that we can't pull off a college football season in the fall. So, I mean, we'll see what ultimately ends up happening, but I just – with the way things look right now, I just don't know how you could justify putting these kids at an inordinate amount of risk. I mean, Paul Feinbaum hit the nail on the head this morning on ESPN. He's waiting for one of these commissioners and one of these coaches to come out and give them a reason as to why they should try to play this fall as opposed to waiting in the spring. And money cannot be used as a reason. Right now, I think we all look at it and we say money is the primary motivation, but it's not a good enough reason to put these kids at this kind of risk.
But unfortunately, right now, that is the reason. That is the only, that is
the only reason. It's the only reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I read you that article the other day. I mean, one of the doctors said that there would be 30 to 50% of these guys would test positive, and that, you know, because of the numbers that, you know, between 3 and 7 would die. And yet you still have kids on campus training. It's about the money.
You get death and you're done.
Oh, you're done. That's it.
You're done. Everything is done.
But why even risk that? I mean, the more you read about this, I mean, do I think the NFL should try to push their season back? Yeah, I do. I mean, does it make more sense to have college football? I mean, there are people that say it's doable in the spring and give yourself a chance to have more answers, better treatments. I read an article the other day that said scientists are finding out that COVID-19 could cause brain damage.
Yep, I saw that too.
You're talking about 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids that got to live the rest of their lives. A lot of them that won't play NFL football.
And I think Dr. Fauci spoke at the Financial Times yesterday and said that they're finding this kind of new syndrome where you can be, you know, kind of recover from it and still feel awful for weeks and weeks.
But they're saying it can, you know, the symptoms can go away and then it can come back, Dave. And so when we thought the timeline might have been 2 or 3 weeks and you'd be able to move past it, studies are now showing that people are still having effects that can linger as long as a couple of months, which is scary.
It's terrifying.
But it's what we've been saying since the outset of this thing. We just don't have enough
information about it. We don't have the answers, so why are you going to just push forward with your head down?
Exactly. And so if you're able to buy yourself more time, then why wouldn't you try to do that in order to get as much information as you possibly could so you can make the best decision, not only what's in the interest of the bottom line, but also what's in the best interest of these kids.
Let's hear from Paul Feinbaum. Get up this morning. Nobody's actually given him a good answer of why they should play in the fall.
And one thing I would like to hear Kevin Warren or Greg Sankey or any of these commissioners say to you or me or anyone else, forget talking about whether, you know, we will play a college football season. Give us a reason why you should play a college football season. Tell us why it's worth all this effort. By the way, you're not allowed to say, if we don't play, we'll go broke. That's what this is about. This is a money grab, because I think if money was not an issue, some of these decisions would have already been made, like what they did up in the Ivy League. But right now, this is a house of cards. And, you know, whether Joey thinks we're being negative or not, he did say one thing that was accurate. The numbers are spiking all over the country, especially in the South, in Florida. You can just look up and down the news channels for this. Mm-hmm. And it's a serious, serious problem.
And let's be fair, guys. There is no one that loves college football more than Paul Feinbaum. And he's just almost incredulous at the fact that we are pushing towards the start of a season.
Because the motivation is so transparent. I mean, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, it's all about money. That's all it's about.
It's all about money. Yeah, that's it. And I think the reason why, you know, the Big Ten decided that they would just do conference games is because now they want to have the ability to make their own decisions. It gives them that freedom. Cost a bunch of different schools that aren't in the Big Ten some money, I can tell you that. I mean, what it's cost some of the MAC schools and what it's going to do to their athletic departments.
Sure.
I mean, Bowling Green's losing $2.2 million
from
the two games that got canceled.
It's a lot of money.
See, that's the thing, though. It's not just football. It's not just basketball. These are athletic departments. And some of the bigger schools can handle it. And then there's, you know, a bunch of the others that can't.
Yeah, but the kids shouldn't have to bear the burden of booing the athletic department by putting themselves at an inordinate amount of risk.
No, you're absolutely right. It's proof that the college sports system in general is broken.
Yeah, it is. It's a broken model. And the sooner we can realize that this is not amateur sports, I think the better off we'll be in terms of being able to find a system that can work for the players and for the schools. That's a whole separate conversation, and I think that legislation is moving in a direction that's going to push us closer to trying to resolve that issue in the coming years. But as it pertains to what's going to happen this fall, man, I think people got to call this out for what it is. It is a money grab, and we have to recognize that that's not a good enough reason to put these kids in jeopardy, both their short-term and long-term health. That's just irresponsible. So I guess I'm in a lot of ways encouraged by what I'm hearing from some of these commissioners and some of these coaches, some of these ADs, Dave. Like when Gene Smith from Ohio State comes out and says, yeah, you know, this is a situation where we might not be able to have college football. I feel like they're looking at it with sober eyes right now.
But it shows you how dire it is, Chris. Because this is the same guy that a month ago was saying, I don't see any reason we don't have 50,000 people at Ohio Stadium. And now he's actually at the point where it's like, you know what, I don't even know anymore.
You're right. But I think they're all coming to grips with the reality as the date moves closer to when games are supposed to be played. They're like, I just don't see how we're going to actually pull this off in terms of the travel, the logistics of it, and just keeping the kids safe by practicing and playing games. How do we do that for, 3 months? How are we going to pull that off?
I don't know how. Which really needs to be right now, number one priority.
Yeah, but see, that for the Ivy League was the hypocrisy. Like, I can't sit here and tell all the kids coming back to campus that they can't be, you know, in groups of more than, you know, 20 people. We're going to limit their travel and everything else, and then have my sports teams traveling all over the place playing games.
Yeah.
Because you can't control that. You can control practice. Like, I can have a practice or a training session. Like, we're doing that now. Like, hockey rinks are open, but just – you know, camps and stuff, because you can, you know, dictate how many people are in each group, how far they are spread apart, and everything else.
Yeah, you don't have to have a whole team drills. You don't have to have 5-on-5s. You don't have to have 11-on-11 drills. Like, you could actually make it, okay, 2-on-2. You know, you can do situations like that, keep the group smaller.
Maybe this actually, maybe in the grand scheme of things, though, this expedites college athletes finally getting a chance to make money.
It might.
Well, I mean, just think about it. If we're in a situation where these college athletes were, I mean, if it's name and likeness or whatever, you know, a certain amount of money, then, I mean.
Rick, I would feel differently about it if the college athletes had a union.
Well, yeah, but you could, I mean, at that point,
I would feel differently about it. I really would.
But you could make the argument at that point, like, hey, listen, you know, we need football. We need these kids back on campus. We're going to keep them safe because we're going to have, you know, all the other students do, you know, online learning. So they'll be the only ones on the campus. It'll be like our own, you know, bubble situation. They'll get tested every day, and, you know, it'll be the same model as the NBA and the NHL. But you can't justify that now.
No, you can't do it. Can't do it.
You can't.
Nope. All right, quick break, come back. Rick, it's your time. CMT time on a Friday means it's fun, entertaining, interesting, all the positive adjectives you could possibly think of. CMT is next, 98.7 ESPN. All right, DCR with you, 98.7 ESPN. I wasn't sure if that was us returning or, in fact, the ice cream man was around the block, but I'm told it was us, and here we are.
I wish it was the ice cream man, to be honest.
I haven't seen the ice cream man in years. When was the last time the ice cream man went around your block?
My block? No. We usually get it. I mean, the reason why we're bringing this category to the table for CMT is because I was playing baseball with Milo yesterday, and he said, Dad, after we play baseball, can we go to the ice cream truck? And I had to break it to him that there's no currently no ice cream truck in the neighborhood.
That's so sad.
I know, it's sad.
I mean, you remember being a kid and you'd hear the chimes and you'd run in and get your money and run back out and catch the ice cream man?
Dude, they used to, the ice cream truck, and he was smart. He used to, so he would actually come right down to the baseball fields. So after you get done playing your baseball game, right onto the ice cream truck.
That's the best.
Oh, I'm not going to give it away, I mean, what I would order, but I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
All right, big, so I think you maybe tipped your hand a little bit here with your,
oh, I tipped
with your CMT.
I did more than tip it.
Oh, you tipped. All right, have at it.
All right, here we go, fellas. A little Cuddle Mary Trash for this fun Friday. Headed into the weekend. Put you in a good mood before Dave gives us the weather at 12:30. All right, here we go. Favorite ice cream truck treats.
Ooh.
Here we go. Start off slow. I don't want to get into the real meat of the topic right away. I'm going to give you a snow cone, a lemon ice, and a good old-fashioned push-up pop.
So I'm going push-up pop, lemon ice, and a snow cone, correct?
All right, this is good. I already know which way I'm going to go with this. So off the top, I am going to marry the lemon ice.
Oh.
The shaved lemon ice, got to marry that, man.
Can I give you a quick tip? Can I give you a quick adult tip?
Go ahead.
Do you have any, like, Italian ice places around your neighborhood?
Yeah, we have a Ralph's Ices right down the block.
This is what you do. You go get a big, giant tub of Ralph's lemon ice, okay? And what you do is you take some vodka and you throw it right into the lemon ice. Delicious summer drink.
That sounds like something that I had you bent, though.
Oh, yeah. You're mangled. Like, you got to control yourself.
Yeah, it's like Jello shots in college.
Right.
You know?
It's so delicious.
All right, continue along. So you're going lemon ice to Mary.
Yeah, Mary and the lemon ice. I am going to cuddle the push pop. Very underrated, the push pop.
Yep.
Bombs and I am and going to trash the snow cone. Snow cone is lazy to me.
I got to be honest, I don't even love the snow cone. Like, if you told me in the rest of your life, however long that might be, you will never have another snow cone, I think I could live to 104 and still be a pretty happy person. So
yes, I agree with you.
I'm going to trash the snow cone. I'm also going to marry the lemon ice.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
Love it. Could have one every day after lunch and be a happy guy. And the push pop will be something I enjoy, and I'll go.
Bombs and fallacious seeds.
I think I agree with that. I'm marrying lemon ice. I'm going to cuddle up next to that push pop. Snow cone, I'm all set. I think the kids like the snow cone more than I really respect the snow cone. All right, next up. Here we go. Now we're getting into the news.
Now we're going somewhere.
I'm going to give you the Chipwich.
Oh.
It's the good old-fashioned Klondike bar. What would you do for a Klondike bar? And I'm going to give you the very underrated, in my opinion, just straight-up ice cream sandwich.
This is a tough one.
This is tough.
No, it's not. No, it's not, Dave.
Oh, it is. It is for me. You're talking vanilla ice cream sandwich between two pieces of chocolate, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. All right. I love that. I love that. But here's the difference for me. The other two feel like a meal. The other two you have and you're now full for hours. The ice cream sandwich, you could have one and be wanting more. So I know this is not popular and I don't feel good about saying it. I will gently trash the ice cream sandwich.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa! Okay.
I will cuddle the Klondike bar. Bombs I think the Klondike bar is seeds. A wonderful treat. Rich chocolate, terrific ice cream, much meal-like. I will cuddle Klondike, and I'm sorry, I love the Chipwich. I think it is one of the greats. It would be on my Mount Rushmore of ice cream sandwiches. You got chips in there. I will marry the Chipwich.
Bombs.
Only concern with the Chipwich, because I also love the Chipwiches, you gotta let it rest for a minute. You can't try to dig into that as soon as you get it off.
But
the truck.
Isn't that nice? Like it's almost like a meal.
Nah, but the cookie's too. It's delicious, but the cookie's too hard. Like I gotta wait for it to like.
But you can't rush through it. I think there's something attractive about a sandwich you can't rush through.
Well, here's the thing: you can't let the Chipwich. You can't eat it out of the gate.
No.
Because it's too hard, but you can't let it get too soft where the ice cream is just splattering out of the
chip. Yeah, you can't do that.
Every like what time I would take a bite.
Here's what I would do, Chris.
No, I'm serious. Like, there's an art to eating the chip.
I love
the
phrase when the ice cream is splattering out of the sandwich, though.
Chris, here's what we do. If the three of us go to an ice cream truck, we all get Chipwiches. What we do is we have Dave get naked, make the Chipwich look at Dave, and then it'll soften itself.
Wow.
It's nice. And I get yelled at because we go late, and you'll hear nothing. Yeah,
Dave, I'm so disappointed in you right now. How could you trash the ice cream sandwich?
I don't find it that filling.
Out of
I'll tell
your
you what,
mind?
Chris, I could easily eat four ice cream sandwiches at any one time.
Well, that's why you got to marry the ice cream sandwich. You have to absolutely marry it. It is a staple when it comes to desserts in this country. To trash it is just so disrespectful.
It's almost un-American.
Yeah, it's almost on. Yeah, I don't know who you are right now, Dave. I have no idea who you are. I am going to marry the ice cream sandwich, and I am committed to it. There's no prenup. I'm diving in, and it's till death do us part.
I don't want to play this game anymore. Every time I give an answer that you guys don't agree with, now all of a sudden I'm like the Hamburglar when it comes to ice cream sandwiches. I said like I love the ice cream sandwich, but it's more like of those three, I'm not going to take it.
More so like Grimace. I would say more like Grimace than the hamburger.
Now I'm judged. Now, oh no, Dave. I mean, it's an opinion question.
You deserve to be judged. You deserve
I'm
to
done.
Be judged for.
I don't want to play anymore. I don't want to play
absolutely
anymore.
Absolutely do.
How
do
dare you call yourself
judged.
The Hamburglar?
You deserve it. Rick, I'm cuddling the Chipwich, and I'm gonna trash the Klondike bar.
Trash.
I got no problem with any of that.
Garbage.
None. Ice cream sandwich you eat, and then you have the chocolate still on your fingers, so you got to lick the. I mean, it's terrific, Dave. Come on.
I don't know what Dave is thinking.
You're out of your mind. All right, I'll take my foot off the gas here a little bit, give you guys a chance to, in the words of the great Michael Kay, towel off for a second. I'm going to give you the Bomb Pop,
yes,
the Creamsicle, and you, listen, you get to pick whatever you like. You like SpongeBob, you like the Ninja Turtle, you like Sonic. You know what I'm talking about. Have the ice cream eyeballs.
So we'll call that the eyeballs?
Yeah, it's like the sherbet situation.
Yeah.
Orange sherbet, by the way, is delicious.
Delicious.
Oh.
All right, Chris, I you can go ahead here.
Okay, so I am going to marry the bomb pop. I mean, when Rick brought up this category, that was my go-to. When I was a little kid, when the ice cream truck pulled up, let me get the bomb pop. Love it. Going to marry it. I am going to cuddle. I'm going to cuddle the creamsicle.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I know that might not necessarily be the most popular, but I just, it's something about it, man. It takes me back to my childhood. Like the creamsicle, I don't know, something about it. I'm going to trash the eyeball.
Look at this garbage.
All right, I'll play your game one more time, and I'll get I'll get ready to be lambasted, as typical. The eyeball I'm going to trash, and I don't have any concern with that.
I actually kind of like that one, to be honest.
No, I don't have any compunction.
You can't chew the gumballs to like break your teeth, but
no, you don't
want
taste. That. And God knows how long that's been in there for.
Dave's right.
I'm going to cuddle the bomb pop. I enjoy it.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
It may be an unpopular choice. I love the creamsicle. I absolutely love it. It's light. It's delicious. It leaves you wanting more. I'm a huge fan and would happily marry the creamsicle.
Yeah, the creamsicle is one of those things, right, Dave? It's not fine, but it's got a thing. Like, it's not Holly Berry fine, but it's got a thing to it.
I don't think you'd ever walk up to the ice cream man and say, give me a creamsicle.
No, right there, no, there. You wouldn't.
But whenever you have a creamsicle, it never lets you down.
Yes, it's got a thing to it. It absolutely has a thing. You're absolutely right.
All right, boys. See, that was good. That's what I'm talking about. That was a nice back and forth. You guys brought a lot to that category.
Okay.
All right, now it's going to get tough again. I'm going to be honest. It's going to get tough again. I'm going to give you the chocolate eclair bar, the strawberry shortcake bar, and the crunch bar.
All right.
Do the right thing, Dave.
I won't with you. I know you're going to scream at me. I'm marrying the crunch bar.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry them.
How do you feel about that, Chris?
I'm okay with that.
Okay. I disagree with that. I love the crunch bar. I will cuddle the eclair.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
I'm not a huge strawberry shortcake fan, so I will
That bar is delicious.
Listen, I don't love it.
Yeah, I'm not with Dave on that one, Rick. I'm marrying the strawberry shortcake bar.
Thank you.
If it was socially acceptable, I would
and
marry
I am
them.
Cuddling the crunch bar.
Bombs and hellacious seeds.
And I'm all set with the chocolate eclair bar. I'm good. If I want a chocolate eclair, I'll just go get a chocolate eclair.
Love the chocolate eclair. Here's the thing, though, too, which is I get what Dave is doing here because he loved the Klondike bar as well. Now you get essentially a Klondike bar with the crunch, and you get the stick.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't mess up your hands.
I don't need fruit. Strawberry, I don't need the fruit with my.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's not real fruit in the strawberry shortcake. Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not organic strawberries in that. Yes, I would agree.
All right, final one, boys. Final one. I'm going to give you the King Cone. The Choco Taco. In the Oreo cookie ice cream sandwich.
Oh, these are all so
this
good.
This is painstaking. I mean, it's delicious.
I love the King Cone.
Okay.
All right,
yeah,
Chris, you're up.
I'm going to marry the Oreo cookie.
If it was socially acceptable, I would marry
sandwich bar, whatever you want to call it. I'm marrying that. That's extra special. I am going to cuddle up to the King Cone.
Bombs and delicious.
You're trashing the Choco Taco?
Got to do it, Dave. Oh. Got to do it. Choco Taco, kick rocks.
That's unbelievable.
I can't. Oh, my God.
I'm doing it. I love it.
I could never. I couldn't live with myself if I tried
favorite tacos.
Choco Taco.
I mean, that's probably second on the list.
Love the Choco Taco.
Yeah, I mean, there's one taco I'm a huge. I mean, you can't even change my mind, but the Choco is, I mean, that's right up there.
All right. Oh, this is not easy. All right. I will marry the Oreo.
If it was socially acceptable, I would
right
marry them.
Yeah, but it's not. There's not a huge distance. This is like a photo finished for me.
Okay.
Because the Choco Taco finishes a strong second to cuddle.
Bombs and.
And gained ground as we came down the home stretch.
The King Cone? I know.
I don't feel right about it either, but these other two are so dominant. I will move on from the King Cone.
Wow. See, here's the thing. And I love the King Cone. Don't get me wrong. I love the King Cone. Okay, but here's the thing. I go to the ice cream truck, or let's say I'm going to the Mr. Softy, right? They can't make me a Choco Taco and they can't make me an Oreo cookie sandwich, I can get a soft serve in a cone with some chocolate and some nuts on it, which I would probably prefer. A vanilla soft serve?
Yeah, but it's not the same as getting the one from the ice cream man.
Nothing is the same as getting it from the ice cream
man. It's not the same.
Nothing.
Like, you could, but it's not the same.
And it's saying all that to say this. I would probably gas the Oreo cookie, to be honest.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm marrying the Choco Taco, and I will cuddle up next to that cane cone.
Okay. All right. I don't like that, but okay.
Well, I love the Choco Taco. I think it was very underplayed in this trio of
Yeah, and like, I can't cheapen. I've already, you know, made my commitment to the Chipwich. All of a sudden, I now bring an Oreo cookie sandwich into the mix, and then Chipwich gets a little bit concerned.
You think there's going to be a jealousy factor with the Chipwich?
Of course there is.
You try to make them all get along so you can have a nice menage, man.
Cool. Could you imagine that? That's what I'm talking about.
Oreo cookie sandwich?
Here's the thing, though, too. Let me ask you guys a question. I'm getting heat, which is perfect, because that's what I want is get some heat with these categories.
People are all over you on the Twitter,
okay,
aren't they?
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Because this is where it would fit. If I told you chocolate eclair bar, strawberry shortcake bar, and then I threw in the toasted almond bar. I mean, what are you guys doing with the toasted almond bar? As opposed to the crunch bar in that category.
We're trash.
No, I would trash the toasted almond.
That's why they see. Yeah. I know there is a toasted almond bar. I understand it. But
what, people are upset because you didn't incorporate the toasted almond?
Yeah, he's like, because I don't have the toasted almond bar on the list, it's a fraud. It's not a list. I'm giving them categories to make it difficult. If I already know my teammates, that they would just... They wouldn't even look at the
Now, I will tell you this, though. I can enjoy the toasted almond bar. It's just not winning any awards as far as I'm concerned.
Which is exactly why I didn't put it in the mix. I had a feeling that Canty was all in for the strawberry shortcake bar.
Yes.
And then, the crunch bar is delicious. Oh. I don't know if anyone's... Toasted almond bar is nice, but it's not, is it relationship worthy?
It's not the same category.
Like it's on occasion. It's, you know, I'm going to change it up.
It's
a little
not. It's not the same category. It's just not. All right, that was one.
Dang, ice cream.
A Friday edition. Nothing better in sports talk radio than a Friday edition of CMT.
Canty, the Eddie Murphy. I got my ice cream. you don't have none. Yeah. And she drops it.
Yeah.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.